This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith about a local church's 100-year history, St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana, with Father George Rim and with Gene Daly from that parish. Welcome.
Thank you very much,
Steve.
We're
happy to be here.
Now, Father George, when did you come to St. Patrick's?
I came 18 years ago, Steve, in the summer,
Where had you been before?
Before that, I was at St. Mary's Parish in Kewaunee, Illinois, for 10 years, had been pastor there. Prior to that, I served the church in the around the Peoria area, doing some special work in liturgy for the diocese.
And are you from the Peoria area originally?
Actually grew up in Peoria.
Thought I remembered that.
Yes, and my first assignment as a priest was in 1960 to Holy Trinity Parish in Bloomington, Illinois. And I was there for 9 years, very happy years of in a large parish and learning a lot of things.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been a Catholic priest in Illinois all of your career. Where did you study?
I studied at St. Paul Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. It was a seminary especially for diocesan priests. And so we did have people there from all over the Midwest and the Northwest especially. So at that time, Peoria had almost 25 students for the priesthood studying at St. Paul Seminary.
Mm. Quite a difference nowadays, I'm afraid.
Yes, a great deal of difference.
Now, Gene, you've been part of St. Patrick's since 1981.
Yes, I have.
And where did you come from? Where were you before that?
I was born and raised in Chicago.
Okay.
And we moved down here for my husband's, who is now deceased, for his health.
Uh-huh.
And St. Patrick's reached out to me, and I've been embraced by them ever since.
Ah, wonderful. Now, you were a secretary to the committee that came up with this celebration for for the 100-year, for the centennial.
Mm-hmm.
How many people were on that committee?
Well, I believe we started with 12, but it got down to 10, uh-huh. You know. Actually, I think at the very, we probably had between 8 and 10 at every meeting, and we had quite a few meetings. We started in January of 2001.
And you actually had a 2-year celebration because you celebrated the founding of the parish and also the dedication of the church building.
Yes, we did.
And you still are in the building that was built 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Recently refurbished.
That's right. It's amazing to start to think that church building, built in between 1901 and 1903, mm-hmm. Was built by about 40 to 45 families originally. What foresight they had to build it large enough to hold over 300 people.
Right.
And the very same building is still serving a congregation now of about 1,140 families.
Wow.
So, of course, we have lots of masses on a Sunday morning to try to accommodate that.
Sure.
But it has been a wonderful building, and the people love it, of course.
Now, when the people built that church in 1901 and 1902 and 1903, there were only 40 or 50 families there. Did they themselves help build it, or did they hire people to build it? Were they wealthy people? Were they working class? What sort of Catholics were here in Champaign, Illinois, Urbana, Illinois in those years?
Well, they were largely, I think, working people.
Uh-huh.
The railroads brought a lot of people to this area back in the 1800s, and a lot of those were the people that formed eventually St. Patrick's. A good number were Irish, and that's why the name St. Patrick's was chosen.
Mm-hmm.
There is a lot of interesting kind of history behind just the founding of it, a little folklore maybe there, but the first pastor assigned to the parish was Father Cannon. The parish was founded on May the 20th, 1901. And in July, it was June 30th, he came to St. Mary's Parish and said Mass and preached at that church.
And St. Mary's was the first Catholic church in the Champaign-Urbana area.
That's right. So it's St. Mary's in Champaign.
Yes.
And Father Cannon said that everyone who lived on a certain, beyond a certain street, new boundaries, if you will, would worship the next Sunday at the new St. Patrick's Church. Mm. And, or a new church, at least, in Urbana. Mm-hmm. Now, the legend was that after church, many of the people walked from St. Mary's to the corner that he had specified, the corner of Busey and Main Street. Mm. And all they found there was an empty lot. but within that week, a frame church was built in about 37 and a half hours by the wow. labor of various people. And Father Cannon, who had been a pastor of Gibson City and a number of missions, including Farmer City, brought in pews from Farmer City. Huh. And so the next Sunday, which would have been July the 7th of 1901, the first Mass was celebrated in the new frame church,
sure.
which was there just for the two-year time.
Right. Well, the bigger church was being built.
That's
brick,
right.
The brick church.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot of prejudice in that time against Catholics, and particularly against Irish and Italians and folks who were traditionally Catholics in this part of the country. This was a Protestant bastion in those years. Was it tough for Catholics, for Irish Catholics in particular, to carve out a place in this community?
Well, apparently they knew how to do things. the lot that became the parish property was the owner did not want it to be sold to Catholics, mm-hmm. at least not to the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. All right, and so a person bought the lot, and then within 15 minutes sold it to the Catholic Church.
So you had a helpful Protestant
somewhere in there worked it out, and the property was acquired.
Oh, I see.
And the church has been, I think, a great influence in the community over those years, and we're very proud of it.
Well, we want to talk about some of the influence St. Patrick's Parish has had, but let's talk a little bit about that parish system, because that's unusual for many Protestant Christians and people of other religious faiths. In the Catholic Church, people, you said Father Cannon sort of drew a dividing line and said, okay, there's now going to be two parishes here in Champaign-Urbana. Before there'd just been one, and I'm going to tell you who's going to go into which one.
Well, yes.
That's a different system than some have. It's mm-hmm. geographic.
Parishes,
based on where you live.
Yeah, parishes yeah. usually have boundaries. Mm-hmm. Now, in our own day, that's not as carefully observed because perhaps one-third of our parish now comes from outside the Urbana area, including St. Joseph, Illinois, of course,
when did
and
that change
quite a
happen?
Few from Champaign.
When did that change happen?
This would have come after the Second Vatican Council.
Okay.
It's not that we still don't have parish boundaries. We still do. But when you go back to the founding of it, yes, things would have been pretty close along boundary lines. And the church, St. Patrick's, is a part of a larger portion of the church, which we call the diocese. In this case, it's called the Diocese of Peoria. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you go back to the gradual founding of this area, the church in this area, we would go all the way back to the Diocese of Baltimore when the country was shortly after the founding of our nation.
Uh-huh.
And then Bardstown, Kentucky was the next step coming west.
Uh-huh.
And finally Vincennes, Indiana, and then Chicago, and then Peoria.
And when St. Patrick's Parish was organized, Where was the bishop in 1903?
In the Diocese of Peoria.
Peoria, okay. So that had happened
right.
by then.
That's
okay.
right. And so we our loyalty, of course, is to serve the church in a certain territory, a parish, and then mm-hmm. that parish also is a part of the larger community, which is the diocese. Mm-hmm. And the diocese, I guess you could say, is a part of the metropolitan area of, of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And then finally, of course, to Rome.
And, we internationally, all yes.
Right.
Okay. Now, Gene, when you came to St. Patrick's, who was the priest then?
The pastor at that time was Father Doug Hennessy.
Doug Hennessy.
Mm-hmm.
And how long was he there before the bishop moved him and brought in Father Rem?
Let me see. We came in 81, and you came in 86.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, now, how hard is it for members of a parish when the priest has moved? The priest you've grown accustomed to, now people have gotten used to Father Rem, but he'll be moving and he'll be retiring in June, and people have to get used to another priest. And you don't have a total say in who that's going to be, right?
You may
be involved, but
that's decided in Peoria.
Yeah,
the bishop decides. And when Father Hennessy left, he went to Rome. And it's a very difficult time for the people to get used. I think 1 year it takes for them to adjust to the new pastor.
Doesn't.
Uh-huh. And, of course, now Father Rem is well-loved, and we're going to miss him, too.
Of course. And so the people have to be willing to be flexible and to learn some new things and who a new person is going to be.
And just a little different way of dealing with things, although sure. Father Rem didn't change anything that first year.
Really? Uh-huh.
And we have so many people, committees, that take care of things.
Mm-hmm.
And help, and he just is happy to have them.
Right. I want to talk some more about that, but let me reintroduce our guest for listeners who may have joined the program late. On Keeping the Faith this afternoon, we're talking with Father George Rem and Jean Daly, both from the parish of St. Patrick's Church, Roman Catholic Church in Urbana, which has been celebrating for the last 2 years their centennial. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment or share some of your experiences, please give us a call. Anywhere this program is heard, you may call us free by punching in 1-800-222-9455. Listeners in the Champaign-Urbana area where this program originates at the University of Illinois may access several local lines by just dialing 333-9455. Happy to have listeners participate. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and we're happy to have today Father Rem and Jean Daly. Father George, when this committee came up with these ideas for celebrating for 2 years, how did you start off? What's the first thing you did?
Well, we brainstormed as to what are some possibilities, and we eliminated some and developed others.
Okay.
We especially wanted to do a kind of reenactment of that founding of the parish. And so the opening ceremonies were planned to be on May the 20th of 2001. That would have been just 100 years since the founding of the parish. And fortunately, that date was a Sunday. And so that Sunday afternoon, those who were participating or taking part in the celebration gathered at St. Mary's Church. There we had a little prayer service, and then we walked in procession from St. Mary's, the Mother Church, to the location of St. Patrick's, and then celebrated a grand liturgy to remember our 100-year founding.
Now, speaking of grand liturgies, I know that one of the things you did as part of your celebration was a Mass in Latin. Now, tell us about that.
Yes, it's called the Tridentine Mass,
the
Mass that developed after the Council of the Trent in the 1500s. And that form of the Mass, of course, was the form that most Catholics had been nurtured in since the time of their baptism. And our parish was, of course, nurtured by the Tridentine Mass since its foundation until 1969, when the new rite of the English Mass was introduced and,
with all the changes that came with Vatican II.
Right. Significant changes, of course, at that time included the vernacular and the turning of the altar facing the people, so that now the priest would no longer simply be saying the Mass in a language people no longer understood, but he would be speaking directly in the language they could participate in. Probably the biggest directive of the council toward the worship life of the church was the desire that there would be full and active participation by all the people in the celebration of the sacred rites of the church. And so we've been nurtured now since 1969 by the English liturgy. So,
and with the priest facing the people across the altar, the table, people participating, reading some of the scriptures and prayers, rather than just, I guess in the past, some would say, observing the priest doing it.
That's right.
But it was a change for you, because you had come up after your ordination, and I mean, you had been doing the Mass in Latin. You'd been doing the Mass facing the altar, with the altar on the east wall of the church. How was the change for you, just psychologically?
Well, it was really a significant change. A lot of people don't realize how much of a change sort of in the job description of a liturgist, a priest as liturgist, took place here. Prior to, you know, I mean, during the time of the Latin Mass, the priest, I think, said Mass very devoutly. He was centered primarily just upon the Lord, you know, and addressing the Lord in the Latin language. But with the change, suddenly the priest is called to be a leader of the worship of the people, not just to say Mass before them or in their name, but to involve them in the celebration of that liturgy. So he now becomes a leader of worship, and it's a different experience.
And what about the homilies, the sermons? How did that change with Vatican II?
Well, one of the great differences, I think, in Vatican II was the introduction of a three-year lectionary. Prior to that time, the same selection of readings would have been done every Sunday. But now with a three-year lectionary, a different set of readings is proclaimed every Sunday of the church year, and that's over a three-year cycle. So that more and more of the scripture has been experienced by our Catholic people in worship. And the priest, as homilist, isn't supposed to just pick any topic he likes to talk about that Sunday, but rather to be influenced by the scriptures chosen by the church. And that would be the taking off point of whatever would be his homily that day. So it's hopefully somewhat of a reflection and an application of those scripture passages to the life of people today.
Now, Gene, you grew up Catholic, and so you experienced this change from the other side, from the pew.
Yes, I did.
Now, it used to be a complaint against Catholics by Protestants and others that, oh, they don't even know the Bible. Now, did you find the changes after 1969, where different parts of the Bible were being preached about, and you were sort of expected to learn more of the Bible? Did you find that something new?
Yes, I did, and I found it something that I treasure.
Really?
Because growing up, we did not study the Bible. And now with reading and during the Mass, the readings were not done in English either prior to Vatican II. So this has been a wonderful thing for, I think, for most Catholics. You know, as with any change, there are a few people who say, I liked it the old way, you know.
Well, when you went back, George, and did this Latin Mass as part of the celebration, you had to get special permission to do that, right?
That's right. I wrote to our bishop and was granted that permission, especially for the sake of recalling the worship that had nourished the life of people for a long time. And I really want to emphasize that. It really did nourish the life of people. I wouldn't be here as a priest if it had not been for what I experienced in prayer and worship through the years. But I can tell you, the English liturgy and the celebrating with people has been perhaps the greatest thing of my whole life as a priest.
Oh, really?
A tremendous experience of prayer and worship with the people. We've been blessed at St. Patrick's with good musicians through the years. St. Patrick's has placed a commitment, I think, in their mission to provide good worship for the people. And so we have a full-time musician at St. Patrick's Church, and that really gives us good leadership in prayer and worship.
Mm-hmm.
When you have good leadership in the rhythm and the, people sing. And St. Patrick's is a singing congregation.
Uh-huh. Now, that's another change, though, isn't it? I mean, the Catholics in the past weren't always good at singing.
No, not so well, because it was pretty well restricted to choirs.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And choirs were singing Latin.
Yes.
And so, yes, the general population as such didn't sing very much.
But the liturgical renewal movement within Christianity in general has gained so much from Catholic worship. Catholic music, Catholic hymns are now sung throughout the whole Christian church, Orthodox, Protestant, as well as Catholic, because you've come up with so much wonderful music in people's languages over the last 35 years.
Yes, there's... I knew a man named Omer Wessendorf who brought back from Germany many German hymns when he was in military service.
Mm.
And he began to translate them himself into... And then he was a musician, and he set them to music. And so when the change took place in the Catholic liturgy, there was a corpus of music in his possession that became the basis of the first songbook, the People's Mass book that came out.
Hmm.
And so you can say somewhat, those were nourished by the Lutheran hymns
right.
of Germany.
Right.
And
Bach's not a bad influence.
Of course, then, as you say, there's been so much written and developed over the course since 1969, mm-hmm. and fortunately shared by the churches freely with one another.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, as I think, both Protestant and Catholic scholars and Orthodox scholars were searching the same documents of the early church and influenced by that and... The three-year lectionary is taken up by almost all the mainline Protestant churches, I think, follow that.
Mm-hmm.
There's slight differences, but basically based on that same three-year lectionary.
That's right. And there's been so much also cooperation in terms of theology. I think that would be one of the things that I've appreciated. Gene may not know this, but Father George and I were part of a theological study group that met twice a month for many years, reading different books of theology by Protestants and Catholics and others. And it was fascinating to be in a group where there'd be a Mennonite pastor and a Lutheran pastor and a United Church of Christ pastor and a Roman Catholic priest all trying to struggle with this. Let's think together on these things.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I guess we kind of got off of the question you had said about the Tridentine Mass that we celebrated as a part of our centennial. I had celebrated Mass in Latin for about 9 years
mm-hmm.
almost, and so it was not difficult to say the Latin Mass.
So it came back pretty easily
for you. It came back pretty well.
Uh-huh. But how did it feel to turn your back to the congregation and face the altar again after the change for 30 years?
I did not like it.
Didn't.
I did it, as an act of faith and as a celebration, but it surely once again reiterated for me the conviction of why I wanted to celebrate today in our English language.
We have a caller waiting on line one. Let's go to our caller. You're on the air with Father George. Go right ahead.
Yes. I have a question and a comment. My comment is I follow every day a thing that says leadership should be aimed at making the leaders no longer needed. And that's kind of a challenge. I wanted to hear your guest's response to that. I'm fascinated with what you're saying and what you're doing. And I'm so glad to hear Father Rem in person. I'll give the quote again. Leadership should be aimed at making the leaders no longer needed. what's your response? And I'll hang up and listen off the air. Thank you.
Leadership should be aimed at making the leaders no longer needed. Leadership in the church, there are lay leaders, there are pastors. Is part of your goal as a religious leader at St. Patrick's Parish to somehow empower the people so that they're good Catholics even when you're not there?
I think a lot has happened since the Second Vatican Council in the way of the participation of the laity in all kinds of things, mm-hmm. in worship, and in the life of a parish, through many committees and, you know, parish councils and so on. And yes, I would say that is one of the jobs of a leader, is to pass on as much as possible to your people for their doing. But I don't think that the Catholic Church will get away from its hierarchical structure and its dependency upon priesthood. Mm-hmm. We believe in, we're a sacramental people, and the priest is one of the, we believe, the institutions of the church from the beginning, that Jesus commissioned his apostles to celebrate especially the Eucharist in memory of him. And the early church, before there was the separation from the synagogue, actually continued, you know, to be good Jews. And then after a period of time, they were also gathering on Sunday to celebrate the Lord's Supper. And when there was the separation between the synagogue and the nascent church, then the church, of course, always had some kind of leadership. And that leadership involved priests, deacons, and bishops. And so we continue that leadership, and I think that basic leadership will continue within the church. Mm-hmm. But more and more, lay leadership has come forth, and it's a very important in the church in our day. There's a tremendous number of lay leaders in our church, and especially at St. Patrick's. So I agree with you in the sense that hand over as much as you can to your people and trust that they will do the work that's necessary and faithful work. That's not going to replace, I don't think, the priesthood.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Father George Rem from St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana that's celebrating, has been celebrating their 100th anniversary as a parish. And we also have as our guest today Gene Daly, who served on the planning committee for their celebrations. Listeners who have comments or questions, please do give us a call. This is a live program every Sunday afternoon on WILL AM 580. You may call us at 1-800-222-9455 anywhere the program is heard. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several local lines you may reach at 333-9455. Let me take just a moment, since we're about halfway through our program, to let listeners know who's coming up on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. Our guest next week will be Joan Campbell, who was president of the National Council of Churches for several years. She'll be speaking at the University Y in a couple weeks, but we have her on the radio just this next week. So we'll be looking forward to her on April 4th. She'll be speaking April 9 at the Y at noon as part of Friday Forum programs. On April 11th, our guests will be Joel and Barry Schweitzer talking about Jewish education. Those are some of the programs coming up here on Keeping the Faith in the weeks ahead. These Keeping the Faith programs are sponsored in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious organization at the university. We're now in our 131st year, even older than St. Patrick's Parish. The Y has been busy this week, even though school has not been in session, because we've had 10 different groups of students out doing service projects over part of their spring break. Students who willing to go work with the homeless or go to a Native American reservation to do other things of service during their spring break vacation. So don't believe everything you see on MTV. Some of the college students really were sober. We have a no alcohol policy as part of alternative spring break. Coming up at the Y this week on Tuesday, Know Your University series, we'll have Nancy Casey from the College of Communication. Nancy is the producer of the Roger Ebert Film Festival, and she'll be giving us a preview of that festival at the Y this Tuesday, March 30th at noon. Please come, have lunch. It's a free lecture series and a chance to ask Nancy questions about Roger Ebert Film Festival. This Friday, April 2nd, Professor Bob Parr, that's spelled P-A-H-R-E, from Political Science, will be talking about the European Union. That's at Friday Forum, also a free lecture and time for question and answers, April 2nd, this coming Friday at the Y. One of the programs the Y co-sponsors is the Whirlwind Project, and coming up next Saturday, April 3rd, the Whirlwind Project, which is an interfaith group in Champaign-Urbana, will be sponsoring a poetry and prose reading at the Douglas Branch Library. That's at 504 East Grove in Champaign, Saturday, April 3rd at 1 p.m. Several local folks will be reading poetry at the Douglas Branch Library. The poetry is around the theme of meditation for many different faith groups. And there's another interfaith activity going on this week at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on both Tuesday and Wednesday nights at 7:30 in the Tryon Festival Theater. There's a sacred music festival. It includes everything from Southern gospel music to chanting in the Muslim tradition. It's called the Spirit of Fez, and these are programs. There is an admission fee, but tickets are available for these programs Tuesday and Wednesday night at Krannert Center. The Spirit of Fez, with bringing religious music from many different traditions. There'll be a discussion and also a film that shows how this all originated. That is free from 5 to 6:30 on Wednesday in the Tryon Festival Theater. There'll be a film and then a panel discussion, and I will admit I'm one of the people on that panel that's discussing that film. So, music, Krannert as well. I'll say one last thing about the YMCA. The University Y does survive by people who think its mission is important and make contributions. And one of the ways we accept contributions, in addition to, of course, checks, is we do accept cars and trucks. If you have an automobile you are thinking about getting rid of, trading in, you might want to donate it to the Y and take a tax write-off for that. We do accept working cars and trucks, and often students who really appreciate them end up with them at also a pretty bargain price. So, if you're interested in that, please call me, Steve Shoemaker at the University Y, 337-1500. We have a caller who's been very patient. I want to thank you for waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Hello.
With our guest, George Ram. Yes, go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, I hear you. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Yes, I'm wondering if your guest could characterize the personality of St. Patrick's Parish, specifically how it's influenced by being situated in Urbana, and maybe what makes it different from other parishes. I'll take the answer off here.
Thank you very much.
Well,
the personality of a parish, good question.
Yes, it is. I feel that St. Patrick's is a very participatory parish, that the people are not just on the receiving end, they're on the giving end. That giving end is in so many different ways. They participate very well in liturgy. They plan their liturgies. They, you know, commit themselves to good worship, and I feel that that reflects itself in the Sunday worship at St. Patrick's. They are a people who do a great deal in this community. A lot of people don't realize that food is distributed at St. Patrick's to the poor and the needy on Monday through Friday. And we have a volunteer woman who has done this for years, and coordinated the work of the St. Vincent de Paul Society. I can't tell you how many people she has fed, but it's a tremendous number. St. Patrick's is also, and by the way, St. Patrick's gives to that. It's the giving of the people that enable us to purchase the food from the food bank to enable us to carry out this kind of ministry to the needy. St. Pat's also is participatory in terms of many, many committees that people have a chance to be a part of. Every year we publish a booklet called Who and What is St. Patrick's, and offering the opportunities for service within the parish community. Although I am certainly the leader of the parish and I have the responsibilities of it, but I would not do something at St. Patrick's that would not be consonant with what the parish council desires. I feel that it's my job to sell them on something if I want something, but if I can't, then it's not going to work anyway. So I look to the leadership of the people in the parish council very much in determining the goals and objectives of our parish. Every year, St. Patrick's participates in a goal-setting process. We set five-year goals, and then every year, objectives to try to work toward those goals. So we're a parish that I would say operates out of a developmental concept and tries to involve as many people as we can in the achievement of these objectives and goals.
If I could ask Gene Daly, as a member of the parish, how would you have answered that question in terms of the personality of St. Pat's? What do you tell people when they say, what's your church like?
I would say our church is very warm. It's a community of cooperation, of faith. People are always reaching out to others, no matter what the problem may be. We, as Father said, we feed the poor. We help each other. It's just the warmth and the giving. Newcomers always say, I came here and I stayed here because I felt good, I felt wanted.
Mm-hmm. Let me give the phone numbers again if others would like to make a call and ask a question for our guests. 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Or in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We have a couple callers. Let's go to line one. Yes, you're on the air. Line one, go ahead, please. Hello? Hello, have we lost our line one? All right, let's try line two. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please. Can you hear me? Hello, line two? I'm not sure. We seem to be having problems. Can you hear? Hello? Oops. Well, if our callers will try again, we seem to have had a little technical problem, but let's try again line one. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Ah, good. Go right ahead, please.
To what degree are non-Catholic Christians welcomed into the life and the worship of St. Patrick's congregation? And possibly non-Christians?
We do have, of course, some people who are married to Catholic people, and they come and worship with us. They're most welcome, and they can participate in so far as they can. Of course, they would be limited sacramentally. We do not have intercommunion in our church. You do have to be baptized members of the Catholic Church to participate in the communion rite. However, many of our people at communion time who are not Catholic are welcome to come forward and receive a blessing, and thus to at least participate in that way in the ritual of that part of the Mass. But they can participate in a way of prayer, song, the postures of kneeling or sitting or standing. In other words, they can participate, and we welcome them for our worship.
And in terms of non-Christians, are Catholics very evangelical? Are Catholics, do Catholics welcome people who are not Christian to come to Mass or to come to a study group to learn about the Christian faith in its Catholic variety? Or are Catholics more willing to say, well, you better, it's more likely you'll be born a Catholic?
Well, we're just in the process right now of getting ready to introduce about a dozen people or 15 into the Catholic faith through a process that's called the RCIA, the Rite for Christian Initiation of Adults. Hmm. So it's adult-oriented. It's mm-hmm. a kind of adult conversion process. Mm-hmm. And the process begins usually in the fall and then culminates with the celebration of the mysteries of baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist right during Holy Week on what we call the Great Easter Vigil on Holy Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So there is that process in which people learn about the faith. It's a formation process, not just information. It's intended to help form them in the Catholic faith. Mm-hmm. And so that is going on all the time. And so, yes, I would say our doors are very open. We welcome, and we try to reach out to proclaim the gospel and hope that people will hear the message and respond to it.
And we have another caller on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Yes.
Stephen, I just wanted to tell you thank you very much for having Father Rem on. And I can speak from experience and say that St. Patrick's is a very, very special parish. And I would like Father Rem to mention the Stations of the Cross that were just recently donated by Father Gene King.
Yes, I'd be happy to say something about that, Barb. Father Gene King had a set of original stations, that is, they are original artwork commissioned some years ago, and he's had them in his private possession. And so before Lent this year, we erected those stations in our church and asked the people to kind of make that especially part of their Lenten prayer experience during Lent, to make the Stations of the Cross, which means to walk from one representation to the other, pausing for a meditation before each of those images. And so far, the response of the people has been very favorable to them. You know, any kind of artwork, you won't have total agreement. People have a feeling response to art.
Of course.
And but I haven't heard much negative, and so I think at least the direction seems to be that we're going to keep them at St. Patrick's.
We have another caller waiting, but before we get to that call, I can't leave this topic without saying something about the wonderful sculpture that's suspended over the altar by Nick Britsky, the Rising Christ crucifix that's in St. Pat's. That's such a noted work of art that people come from all around just to see that.
They sure do, Steve. We're very proud, very grateful to Nick Britsky, who is a parishioner of St. Patrick's and a former art professor at the University of Illinois and a very fine artist, of course, himself. Nick was a painter, and I think this was his first three-dimensional figure, and I think it's a work of inspiration. There's something, I don't know what to use, maybe a word mystical, about mm-hmm. that crucifix, mm-hmm. about that rising Christ. It is a truly uplifting kind of image, and it both conveys the sufferings of the Lord, the wounds are apparent on the image, but it is also the triumph of Christ mm-hmm. over death, mm-hmm. and which is reflected there. And we could almost say that's become symbolic of St. Patrick's in our day, is that image. The people love it.
Let's go to another caller, and we'll be testing your ability here, Father. If it's someone from your parish, we'll see if you know all of their names by just the sound of their voice. Line number two, you're on Keeping the Faith.
I have a friend who was a Jesuit for 30 years or something like that, And he had said, this was referring to the caller just before the other one.
Fine.
He had said that non-Catholic Christians could receive communion in a Catholic church. Is that, but you had said that they can go up, you know, to the altar, but not receive, did I misunderstand you? They can receive communion, or either, how does that work?
I'll be happy to answer that. The Catholic Church does not engage at this point in intercommunion, that you are supposed to be a member of the church in order to receive communion. Now, I think that probably every Sunday I probably give communion to a number of non-Catholic people who, in all good faith, are there to worship with us and who come forth and receive at that point. I never ask anyone as they come up, are you a baptized Catholic? but the reason, I guess, behind this is that communion for us is a sign of unity, and that unity is not yet accomplished, and therefore maybe the hunger that is there in the wider Christian community might, for Eucharist, a hunger for Eucharist, might be one of the things that brings us closer together as time goes on. I certainly hope that's true. It would do me wonderful if one day we could have intercommunion with our with other members of the church. But, you know, some people have no sense of that, you know, there must be baptism for the reception of other sacraments, and that is, baptism is the way in which we profess our unity with the church. And communion is another sign of that unity. Now, there could be some argumentation, I think, for intercommunion on the basis that communion could also help to build unity. And maybe some churches, I think, go on that basis.
We have a caller on line 4, our toll-free line. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Father George Rim.
I'm a retired Baptist pastor, and when I was in the Chicago area, I had wonderful experiences working with deacons in your congregations. But I've been down here in southern Illinois, and I've been trying to encourage some of my friends, some of them who have retired early and some others, to seek that out. But I don't seem to, they don't seem to find the information they need, and I wondered, does the church still encourage deacons, and is it a useful leadership in your congregations, and would it be helpful for the future? I had great experiences, and I think it could be helpful to the church. Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing that topic up. We do have a deacon at St. Patrick's, and we've had one ever since I've been there. In fact, as I've had three different men serve as deacons in our parish.
Now tell our listeners what a deacon is. Some may not know.
All right. A deacon is actually ordained, but not a priest. The sacrament of holy orders we see involved in the diaconate, in the priesthood, and in the episcopacy. All three share in the sacrament of holy orders. But a deacon is not a priest. He is not permitted to offer Mass or to hear confessions. A deacon can preach. He can baptize. He can do marriages outside of Mass. And he can also do funerals outside of Mass. And so a deacon could be of real service to any Catholic community. And it has, again, been restored within the church as a permanent ministry open to people who are not going on to the priesthood. For many years, that is what it was. It was a step toward priesthood. Now we call it the permanent diaconate to distinguish it, that it is open to married men, and they serve the church very generously. Most of them, of course, have full-time jobs, and so it is part-time ministry. In some places around the country, as the shortage of priests becomes more acute, deacons are being asked to take on more responsibility and even leadership of some Catholic parishes.
Let me follow up on that question with a question about women in the Catholic Church, and maybe we should start with Jean on this. Jean, you were raised in a Catholic family, and baptized as a child,
as an infant.
And have grown up in the Catholic Church. How has the women's place in the Catholic Church changed over your lifetime?
Well, in my lifetime, to begin with, only the sisters and the nuns were involved, and they were kind of as teachers and in the background, more or less, as far as the Mass and those things were concerned. Now, the women are... We serve as Eucharistic ministers. We serve as lectors. So I feel that the women have progressed some. I was never disappointed that women weren't more prevalent in the church in doing things, but I'm very pleased now, and I serve in those capacities myself.
Over the 100 years of the parish at St. Patrick's, how has women's roles changed from your perspective, Father George?
Well, probably the most significant change has been the fewer women in religious life, because all of my teachers in grade school were nuns.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's not the case anymore.
No, that's not. Most parish schools today are staffed by all lay people.
Uh-huh.
So the role of the women, though, has certainly developed within the church, especially because of Second Vatican Council II, and more the emphasis on the dignity of baptism, which gives them the right, along with males, to serve and to be involved in the church. The sacrament of orders has not been opened, however, to women, and this is, you know, one of the big issues that is often talked about, and I'm sure if we wanted to go into that topic, we'd need more than the hour, and and we probably would have lots of questioners.
Of course. Well, let's focus on, with the little time remaining, on some of the other celebrations that happened at St. Pat's over this last two-year period. What stands out in your mind as some of the things that were most moving?
Well, certainly the refurbishing of the church.
Mm-hmm.
For the centennial, we did a repainting and recarpeting. We didn't have to do much in terms of the furnishings of the church, because that had been done in the prior renovation more than 20 years ago.
Now, you did open the original cornerstone and saw what was there and then added to it 100 years later. Tell us about that.
That was exciting. We were able to take the cornerstone out of its place, open up a time capsule that was there in a nice celebration in which we took each thing out, and then we put together a new container for some other things, and we included lots of things from our present days to hand on to the church for the next 100 years.
And one of the things you placed in that you were showing me earlier, which is a wonderful book of family histories. So tell us about that.
Yes, our archives committee worked very diligently on a book which we published, not a history of the church or the parish, but a history of families who attend Mass at St. Patrick's. So these are current families. Most of them are current. Some we received a few from people who had moved away.
Mm-hmm.
But it gives the background of their family, and it'll be a great genealogical resource, I think, in the years ahead. But people love to read about other members of the church here and what their backgrounds are.
And you let the people write them yourselves?
Yes, they wrote them themselves. Mm-hmm. Very little editing was done, and most of it is just as they handed it on to us.
I opened a page just almost at random and see that one of the people here says that he confesses that he's an exceptionally bad golfer. Now, I won't say that was Tom Kasich who said that. But
oh, I see.
But I see people included a sense of humor in what they wrote.
Right.
Yes, they
did. Other things, of course, that I think were significant, we did a centennial lecture in which we had a person come from the University of Notre Dame who in the history department, and share a good deal of the setting of American history with these years of St. Patrick's, and a parish mission that was a part of this a spiritual emphasis for a whole week, and to celebrate these events and to praise God for the many blessings he has given to us over 100 years.
Are there regrets as you look back on your 18 years, that is, almost a fifth, I guess, of the history of the parish? Any regrets you have, things that you sort of say, gee, I wish I would have done this, or here you are approaching retirement. Are you looking back and saying, I should have done this, or I wish I had done that?
Well, I'd have to answer no. I don't have any regrets. I think that, you serve a parish while you're there with what resources you have and what their needs are of the present. We have tried to look forward to the future. We did some long-range planning. We tried to see whether or not we'd be ready to expand. We just couldn't quite reach the point of saying yes to do expansion. But we are thinking about the future and thinking what we can do.
Mm-hmm. Gene Daly, you served on this planning committee. Any highlights in our last minute that just come to your mind that we haven't mentioned yet?
Of the centennial celebration? Uh-huh. I believe, I just remember at the rededication of the church, it was a glorious mass. And at the reception afterwards, Bishop Jenke said, what beautiful music it was, mm-hmm. and it went to the heavens, and mm-hmm. I just remember that, and it was.
Well, I want to thank our guests and all of our callers today as we've looked back on the last 100-plus years of St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana. We've been talking with Father George Rem, who has served that parish for 18 years and will be retiring in June at the end of a long and very fruitful ministry in many different parishes in Illinois. We've also had as our guest Gene Daly, a member of the parish, who was on the committee that planned this various celebration. And thanks also to Barbara Peckham, who recommended this program, and in fact bought the right to have this program at the Y auction a year ago. So the Y will be having a fundraising auction again in April 23rd, and who knows, someone may pick another program for us. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be having Gene Campbell by phone, who is the former president of the National Council of Churches. She'll be speaking at the Y a week from Friday. On April 11th, our guest will be Joel and Barry Schweitzer talking about Jewish education. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. I'm the executive director of the University YMCA. Thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
It started as a joke. Danny Wallace put a small ad in a London newspaper. It simply said, "Join me," and invited people to send a passport-sized photo. Thousands did, but no one knew what they were joining. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, the story of Danny Wallace's Join Me Collective. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from these business partners: Classic Tan and Swimwear, Champaign, Decatur Quilters, Decatur, and Anderson Foundation. These business partners join the friends of WILL in making great programs possible. Thank you.
Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, occasional showers and thunderstorms during the evening, then a chance of showers after midnight. Cooler with the low in the lower 40s and west winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers, isolated thunderstorms in the afternoon, the high in the mid-50s with west winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain and snow showers, the low in the mid-30s with west winds around 10 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.
Okay, we are...